All right, well, I'll call to order of the meeting of the retiree committee on Tuesday, August 27th at noon. Can I do a roll call, please?
Roll call, Director Amezcua.
Present.
Director Wiegand.
Here.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Yeo.
Here.
Director Whitaker.
Here.
Director Meeks. Director Nguyen. Director Tran. Director Sheldon.
Here.
Jason Dadakis.
Present.
Kevin O'Toole. Roy Herndon.
Here.
You do have a quorum of your committee.
Now is the time for visitor participation. Anyone in person or online that wishes to speak? Seeing none, I will. Do you want to call Director Tran attendance?
Yes. Director
Good
Tran.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm here.
Thank you.
Okay, items received too late to be agendized. Are there any? Okay. All right, consent calendar, minutes from the meeting, and yeah, meetings from our meeting on July 23rd.
I'll move approval. Second.
Okay, I'll call the roll.
Roll call, Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Wiegand?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Jason Dadakis?
Yes.
Roy Herndon?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
Now are our items for consideration, stable value fund options.
All right, thank you, everybody. So we need to make a decision today about how we want to proceed with potentially adding a stable value option to both of the retirement plans. So right now, the safe harbor option is your Vanguard Federal Money Market Fund. So the question is, in the past, we've had a guaranteed fund of some kind. Guaranteed funds have had a very difficult 3 or 4 years because interest rates have risen for quite a while. We're in a bond bear market that has lasted for 48 months. That's the longest in the history of the United States. The previous length was 17 months. We're at 48 months. So it's been a big change between the Fed's low interest rate policy and the COVID period of time. We've taken the 10-year treasury from about half of 1%, the lowest in the history of the Republic, up to about 5% where it was last October, today around 385 or so. So when you're a stable value fund, you're buying bonds in the intermediate period part of the curve, so anywhere from, say, 2 to 5 years. So you're not affected as much as the long bond funds, but what you're trying to do is pick up more yield because normally you have a yield curve. And what that means is that lower durations, shorter durations have a lower interest rate. You're usually incentivized to go out further in your bond purchases by those higher interest rates because you are technically taking more risk on. It's more risk in terms of when you'll get your money back. It's more risk in terms of could that entity go bad at some point while you own their bonds? Because essentially, when you own your bonds, you're lending money to that corporation or to that government when you're or a municipality, depending on the type of bonds you buy. So we had the Prudential Guaranteed Income Fund, which became the Empower Guaranteed Income Fund. It hadn't been since the 1980s that Prudential had raised their gate, which restricted withdrawals from their fund. One of the reasons we chose Prudential in 2017, I believe, was that they had that restriction where you could get out within 90 days at book value. The other vendors had market value adjustments when, in essence, the district or your participants would take the loss if there was a loss. So we anticipated interest rates could go higher and that danger could come. But unfortunately, Prudential raised that gate. So we did spend about 6 months of last year negotiating with Empower and Prudential to come up with the deal we came up with. That deal was that they annuitized the GIF. They allowed people to withdraw money from it, which that was a big win. So voluntarily, people can take money out of it. But what they can't do is directly move it into the Vanguard Money Market Fund. But they can move it to any other investment. And after 90 days, move it in the Vanguard Money Market Fund, which some people have done. But what's going to happen is on November 1st, the first half of the money that we have still in the Empowered GIF is going to be wired to Fidelity. It's still technically at Empower. You see it on your statements, you see it in your accounts, but it's technically at Empower. And then a year from then, there's going to be another, the last 50% of the money is going to be wired. So my expectation for most of this year is that we would place a stable value fund that would receive that money when it came through. But the homework I've done for the last 2 months has changed my thinking, mainly because the yields on the stable value funds aren't anywhere close to the yield on the money market fund. The other issue is if we selected a new stable value fund and wired that money into that stable value fund, now those employees would have the same problem where they couldn't pull the money out of that and move it into the Vanguard money market fund. They'd also have a 90-day equity wash, as it's called. And so they would be in the same situation there with the Empower gift. But if we did end up wiring into the Vanguard money market fund, people would have the choice right away on day one to move it into the new stable value, to move it into any other fund in the plan. So the restrictions would be zero. The other issue is that the current yield is far higher on the money market fund. It's over 5.2%, but that's going to change as the Fed starts to lower interest rates. But based on some of these bids, it might take 10 or 11, 12 interest rate cuts before we even got to where the stable value yields were. So as we receive these bids, we saw a consistency where the funds that were the biggest, the most well-managed, had the best track record, typically had some of the lowest yields, and the ones that would create a brand new fund and said, here's a new fund, we'll start it for you today. It's $1 million in it. You can put another 15, 16 million, and that would be great. Those were ones that we ended up eliminating because we didn't want to be 99% of the business in that fund. Who are we going to sell the bonds to if somebody's trying to move the money out of it? So that's where I've come. That's where we stand as this meeting begins. Hopefully everyone's gone through the packet, but let's open it up to questions before we even get in the slides, because I'm sure there are a few. And if not, I'll go through everything and then we can get to a point and decide if we do want to narrow this list down, and if so, do we want to see presentations from these finalists? So. Yes, please.
So your recommendation is, instead of moving the 50% into whatever we select, just move it to Vanguard and do select one so people can move it if they want to and just go with that?
Yep, that's exactly right.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
And you indicated the money market, you expect it will continue to yield higher than the stable value as long as the Fed continues these incremental rate cuts. You said over 10 to 12 periods. They meet what, quarterly?
Every 6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay. It
could be a couple of years. You know, if there was a financial disaster, it could be 6 months, but... Okay. The guess would be you're talking about maybe early 2026. A lot of people think the Fed, this, you know, these opinions change day to day, but a lot of people think the Fed is just going to bring rates down so they're not restrictive, maybe to 3.84%, not taking it down to 1% where we were during COVID or during the financial crisis of 2008.
Right.
So in those scenarios, the money market fund's still paying more. But the other attractive aspect of the money market fund is it's completely liquid. No one's sure. restricted.
Yeah.
So participants can make their own choice. And that's typically what we've driven this by, is being participant directed. Now you guys decide how you want to manage your money because it's yours. It's not ours. So. But at the moment, their money is. And so somebody asks, is it safer? Technically, treasury bills are still considered the safest thing out there, even though the federal government has $35 trillion of debt. But they can print money. And nobody else can. So that's the idea. So stable value funds, now you're subject to the credits of the insurance companies that are guaranteeing that. So you have what's called counterparty risk, which generally is pretty safe, but it's not as safe as treasury bills. So the money market fund is technically safe.
There was a hand up on the screen, but is there anyone else in the room that had a question?
Just a quick question. How much money do we currently have in the GIF?
It's about $32 million. So
still
let's say 60.
Amount.
Yeah. So let's say $16 million is going to be wired on November 1st.
Thanks. And Scott, will that work? Is it anyone with a balance in that fund on November 1st, half of it will go to whatever fund we designate?
Yes, sir.
So if someone has, you know, $10,000, five will go into someone that's 500, 250 will go in. Just everyone gets it. Half.
Yep.
Each participant.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so we are making a committee decision where that money's going. So.
Okay.
But then the next day, sorry for the interruption, but the next day it could be moved to anything else they wanted. Whereas as of today, they can't move it to anything else they want to. They can move it to the stock and bond funds, but they can't move it to the money market. So it could stay in the money market fund. It could go into a new stable value fund, which I don't think will be in that plan by November 1st. Talk about that in a second. But it could, say, for 2025, go wherever they want it to go, putting where it is.
Director Sheldon, I saw your hand, and if there's any others.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize if this question's already been stated or answered, but what is the rate of return?
For which one?
For what you're talking about.
The Vanguard Money Market at the moment is paying about 5.25% interest.
And that's what you're recommending to go to?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other hands or comments online?
No.
Okay. And it looks like any of the stable value funds.
I have one other comment, Mr. Chairman. Just for the committee's pleasure, hard money loans are running at 10 to 12% with 2 points. So just so you know that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. And then there was one other question in the room as well.
Just a clarification that the stable value funds are running about 3 max, it looks like, at 23.
Yeah. And we'll talk about why those yields are where they are. Yeah. So there could be a point in the future where that crosses, and generally when interest rates are declining, you'd expect stable value rates to go down more slowly. I just don't think that's going to be a 2024 and perhaps not a 2025 event.
All right, it's all you.
All right, so let's just talk a little bit about what these are. So sorry, the top's a little tough to see there. But you have stable value funds. This is not something you're going to buy as a retail investor or at a bank or even at an insurance company. So they're created for retirement plans. So they're not a money market fund. They're not a bond fund or a fixed income fund. And so they have to have a stable price. Bond funds change in price every day. If you buy a bond, you buy a bond fund, those prices are going to change. They're not going to fluctuate like a stock fund, but they are going to change in price. So what we do here is that there is a wrap provider, which means that there's an insurance company who comes in. It might be one insurance company. It might be many. That guarantees the bonds. So if the bonds go bad, if bonds from Coca-Cola suddenly aren't able to pay off because Coca-Cola has serious financial difficulty, then the insurance companies that come in and make it right, pay the plan back for the losses in those bonds, and you're paying the insurance company, in essence, a wrap fee. In most cases, it's 15 basis points or 0.15% is a wrap fee that you're paying on that money to get that insurance. The other thing they have to do is they have to keep that price at book value. So you're going to hear market value and book value terms a lot. Book value is I put in $1,000, I can take out $1,000, right? If you put your money in a bank account, you don't expect it to fluctuate. You might earn some interest, but you would be surprised if your $1,000 was worth $990 the next time you looked. So the stable value funds, part of what the wrap provider is doing is allowing people to withdraw money from these funds when the bonds are underwater. And every single stable value fund in the country, except ones that were created in the last 6 months, are underwater. How are they underwater? Well, they were buying bonds when interest rates were at 1, 2, 3%. Interest rates rise. Those bonds are less valuable because the rate of return is fixed. That's why we call it fixed income. So when rates rise, the prices are going to fall. Now, what happens, though, if you buy individual bonds is there's a magnet to that price, which is the maturity date. As you get closer to that maturity date, the bond's going to go back to its par value or its original book value. So the closer you have in terms of maturity, the less you're going to see is a drop in the price. If I just have to wait till spring of 25 and I have a bond there, it's going to be getting closer and closer to par every day because it's about to mature and Coca-Cola is going to pay me back my principal. But if it's a bond not due till 2035, it's going to be a significant discount if its interest rate's not competitive because you've got to wait a very long time to get it. Now, why would an investor buy a bond that's, say, a 3% bond when rates are at 5% if it's not due for a long period of time? Because they can buy it at a discount. And the bond market can be very efficient, so the prices will drop so that that investor is getting both from the coupon and from the appreciation of price up to the par value, the same yield that somebody would get for a bond that was issued brand new that day. So maybe you paid 88 cents on the dollar for it. So you're getting 12% over the life of the bond. As it appreciates back to par value, that adds to your 3% yield, and the numbers all make sense. So the bond market's very efficient in terms of moving those prices, but what it doesn't move is the coupon. The coupon is the set rate of interest. So when you call it fixed income, that's what we're talking about. What they have to do with the stable value is act like it's guaranteed, either using both the depreciated value of the bonds and suppressing the yield. You're going to see some of these yields are higher than their payment rates because they're taking losses in those bonds. Because what are people doing? They're wanting to get it out of that into something paying more. So they're actually having to sell some of those bonds at a loss. Okay. And that make any sense? So let's just kind of give you a little comparison here. So money market funds are very short end and very reactive. So money market funds for, say, 2009 to 2021 paid almost zero. That's because the Federal Reserve artificially held interest rates down to try to motivate investors to buy houses or to buy stocks or to invest in businesses. So the maturity date on their bonds are going to be 60 days or less. You can have two types of money market funds. There are treasury money market funds. Now all retirement plans are required by law. Congress passed a rule that says if you're in a retirement plan, you have to be a treasury money market fund. There are also prime money market funds that can buy corporate paper. Famously, two of those broke the buck, the prime money market funds, when Pacific Gas and Electric defaulted on their bonds from some of the fires. So they actually had people that were in guaranteed accounts that lost money. So it's not such a guaranteed account when that happened. So treasury money market funds, that's what we have. We have the Vanguard Federal Money Market Fund. It only owns treasury bills. So when those rates are very high, it's very attractive. It's liquid. It's easy to get in and out of. But what happens is if you start seeing the Fed reset interest rates lower, the new bonds they buy will go lower quickly. Now, you're not going to lose any principal, but your 5.25 yield will be 4.75, 4.5, a little bit different every day. Now, if the Fed gets to some point in the future where they stabilize rates, the rates will stabilize around where the Fed funds rate is, which is the rate the banks, the Federal Reserve sets for banks to loan money to each other. Now, if you have a stable value fund, they're going to the intermediate part of the curve, let's say 3 to 7 years. It's kind of the range they're buying the bonds. Historically, that's been where they can pick up more yield and offer the guarantee. And with higher fees, they can still give you a better yield. And that's why a lot of retirement plans have offered those. But as you guys might know, we have an inverted yield curve, which we've had for the longest period in history, where you can get more yield from, say, a three-month bond than you can from a three-year, 10-year, even a 30-year. So what happens when interest rates rise, again, those prices go down. Even though you're seeing the yields on the new bonds they buy be much higher, they're still waiting out a whole series of bonds. So this rate rise has been going on for 3 years. So if you look at a lot of these portfolios, they're seeing stuff mature. So the yields are getting a little bit better, but they're underwater at the same time when everybody wants their money back. So they're not able to, say, take advantage of those lower or those higher interest rates and lower prices because everyone really wants their money out to go somewhere else, just like some people have done here. So types of stable value products. So the traditional ones are the guaranteed investment contract, and it's come to known as a GIC, G-I-C. So guaranteed investment contract. So it's issued by a particular insurance company. So their credit ratings and their balance sheet are really important. So typically in that case, they're going to promise you a rate. If you looked at retirement plans in the late 80s, people didn't have stock investments or index funds. They just had a guaranteed rate. They'd say, and I think this happened here, you'd say a rate this year is 8%. Well, that was typically an insurance company saying, we'll pay you 8% and we'll guarantee the principal in there. So it's backed by their general account or particular separate accounts. A general account for an insurance company is, remember, when we pay our life insurance premiums or auto premiums or homeowners insurance, what does the insurance company do? Well, they sit on that money for a period of time until they have to pay out claims. The whole idea of the insurance company is they're going to make money on your money while they're holding on to it. That's why Warren Buffett has 2/3 of his money in insurance companies. He likes to be able to invest that money and make money before he has to give a portion of it back. So you are backed by the financial strength of the issuer. So the importance there is the issuer be strong. So people probably remember from the late 80s, Executive Life, a couple other insurance companies actually went out of business because they bought a lot of high yield junk bonds, low credit stuff from Michael Milken. and went under, and so did the insurance company. So that had to be bailed out by government entities. So it's a contract essentially with the insurance company. That's why we've gone to such depth in the search process, is the district's essentially signing a contract with one of these providers to get a set rate of interest and a set guarantee on the money. But now more popular is the synthetic GIC, which you have assets in a contract, but rather than using one insurance company, you use 5, 10, 12 insurance companies, better known as wrap providers. So you have one issuer who's managing the money, buying the bonds, taking care of the investments, and then they go out to insurance companies and say, would you guarantee 15% of this portfolio? Would you guarantee 10% of this portfolio? So they're going to do due diligence on their wrap providers. The wrap providers are going to do due diligence on the portfolio to say, yeah, we're willing to guarantee these bonds, and we're going to charge as much per year. So I like the synthetic approach myself because you're spreading the risk to a lot of insurance companies. And so if there was financial difficulty, you're not worried about one insurance company's viability in terms of guaranteeing the portfolio, but also they're spreading their risk out. So they're not just guaranteeing one portfolio, they're guaranteeing small parts of many portfolios. So the other way you can go is separate account contracts. That's where, as the district, we in essence would be partnering with the insurance company. The insurance company would own the bonds, but that specific group of bonds would be the ones that we own. Often the rates are higher on that, but the district has more responsibility in terms of essentially we own the good and bad with the bonds. It's harder to sell those bonds to other members of the portfolio. We have to sell them on the open market. Within a synthetic GIC, you have a little bit better viability where you can actually sell those to other investors who are looking to move money in there. Questions for me?
Is there any risk of having too many wrap providers? Does it then start reaching out to agencies or providers that aren't quite as viable as maybe the top five?
Yeah, I assume that's possible. But what we're counting on with the vendor that we choose is that they are they've done their homework and the wrap providers are high quality insurance companies. I think the problem with too many might just be it would increase the expenses, but we get a chance to look at the expenses there too.
Are there high quality insurance companies nowadays? They seem to all leave in California.
Yeah. Well, that's a philosophical question, maybe. So you're looking at insurance companies that do annuity business, life insurance, a little bit of everything. So this is just sort of part of their portfolios too. So, but you'll see some of the names as we go through these here. All right, good questions, everybody. So we sent a request for information out. On the left-hand side are the vendors that we sent this to. These are all well-known vendors in the business. Some names you may know, some names you may not. And then we did receive back, after about a month, responses from 9 different providers. So those, we had a questionnaire, we had a set of minimum qualifications, we had several requirements, and that's what we got back. So having studied all of those, our team narrowed that down. We knocked out 4 of those providers, Great Gray / MetLife, The Standard, John Hancock, and Federated Hermes. Based on their lack of track record, limited asset base, duration was too short term. The problem with that is it's too close to the money market fund. We've already got a short duration fund. We need a long duration fund, or intermediate at least. Questionnaire was non-responsive. It was funny, some of them wouldn't answer the question. So it's like, why did you bother? And then benefit responsiveness. So what's benefit responsive? So more industry jargon. But what that means is if you have an employee who retires, who's taking distributions, who's taking a loan, who leaves the company to go somewhere else, they have to be able to get their money out of that stable value fund. So if the stable value fund has restrictions like Empower's gift does on us, those employees still need their money. You can't not pay your bills because there's restrictions on it. So that means if somebody needs their benefit, they're taking their monthly withdrawal or they're moving their money to their new job, they have to be able to get the money out. So one of the providers had a million restrictions on it and said if the district was to encourage your employees to take out or the advisor, is it that we'll shut the door, you can't get your money back. And it's just like, why would we play games with that? So this is how we narrowed that down. Lack of track record, limited asset base. So 2 of the providers made bids in products that started this summer. So it's great because the rates were better, but there's no track record, there's no due diligence, there's no diversification. You're the only investor. So who are you going to sell your investments to? questions for me about this so far? So down to this list of five, which is where I need your help. So I think many of these names you may know, T. Rowe Price, Columbia, which is now owned by Ameriprise, which is another brokerage firm like Wells Fargo Advisors, Invesco, New York Life, and then Morley Capital, which has been a stable value provider since its inception, but was purchased by Principal. So now they're part of Principal. People probably know they're a 401k and a insurance provider. So in the assumptions of the RFI, everybody had to be able to state that they had these features in their stable value fund. They had to be available on Fidelity's record-keeping platform. Seems obvious, but not all of them are. They can't be part of Fidelity. I think one of the things that we've decided here as a committee is that we don't want to have our record keeper attached to our stable value fund anymore, as we did with Prudential. So if we did end up leaving Fidelity at some point in the future, we can take our stable value fund with it. So it's not the big impediment it was to leave Empower. And then, as I mentioned before, number three, benefit responsive. Employees need their money, should be able to get to it. And then the other thing we thought was important, we had a meeting in March of 2023 with the Employee Advisory Committee, that I'm going to reference a few times. But one of the things we thought was most important is that exit provision. So that is a 12-month put, which means if we notify them today, they have until this day next year to give us our money at book value. We don't care what's happening with the bond market or interest rates or the Fed or wars. That's their problem. They have to give us our money back. Now, we had a 12-month put on the product we had with our prior provider, and we made a withdrawal request. Is that Union Bank, right? That's what name I was trying to think of, which has since been bought out. But I think they gave us the money after about 4 or 5 months in that particular case. But this means we don't have to worry about market value adjustments. Again, a market value adjustment is your bonds are at 93 cents on the dollar. There's a 7% loss. That's $850,000. How would you like to cover that? You want to wire the money to us? Do you want to have your employees take those losses? We never want to have those conversations. So number five, portable to other record-keeping platforms. Hopefully we don't ever need to leave Fidelity, but we have to have the freedom to do so, and we can take that product we select today with us. And again, I think the timeline of that stable value product and the viability of that stable value product is going to be based on its merits, not on its connection to our record-keeper. All the vendors had at least 10 years experience in the tax-exempt market. Most of them have been dealing with the tax-exempt market since the 70s. Some of these providers do not want you to have a competing fund. They don't want another fund in there that could show a better interest rate than theirs. So that's to continue the offer of the Vanguard Federal Money Market. So again, that's where we've been putting safe harbor money for the last year. None of them have an issue with that are on the final five. And then we've all talked a lot about revenue sharing. The product that has been offered is their lowest cost version, which means they pay no revenue sharing. And as you might remember, all revenue sharing is now refunded back to plan participants. It is not kept by Fidelity or kept by Empower as it was in the past.
Scott, at number seven there, is that the same? Will it still be the restriction of transferring between the funds?
Definitely.
Okay, that will be maintained for all these.
All the providers have the same restriction. So the phrase that's used is an equity wash. I don't know where the word equity goes in there, but it is the standard terminology, which means if you want to pull your money out of the stable value into the Vanguard money market, you still need to go into some other investment for a 90-day period. But that's an industry standard. That's what we're living with the GEF, and that would be the standard here. And that's why I would hesitate to wire the money into our selected stable value. So my thought, and again, it's your decision, not mine, is to try to select finalists from this list and perhaps have presentations on site or virtually, depending on your preference, from the management of those fund companies. Now, we issued the RFI with telling people exactly what was happening with the GIF, that we were getting a wire in November of this year, a wire in November of next year. So these bids were made in expectation that there was $30 million coming their way. So when we come back and decide on finalists, we may get a different, some people may have soured on the bid because there's not going to be as much money initially. 5 years from now, there could be $50 million in there. But they may not feel as this is attractive of a client for them as they thought when we issued the RFI, because my expectation was for sure that we were going to do that until I sell the yields. So something to think about. So our decisions today, so when that wire comes out, let's say it's $16 million, $16.5 million, where will that money go? Does it go to the new stable value or does it go to the Vanguard federal money market? You don't have to decide that right now, but that's one of the questions before the committee. And then despite the thorough vetting, I having a real tough time getting this down to three, much less to one. So we certainly wanted your opinions on various things. And then number three is we need to decide if we're going to add the unstable value. Unfortunately, Fidelity is very methodical in their process. They really would need our decision by this weekend as to which one we were going to do, if it was going to be there on November 1st. But that would be under the assumption that we're wiring this money into a new stable value option, which is still a choice, but that's what we need to vote on today. Not my recommendation to do so. Pausing again for questions.
Scott, are you still thinking we would want to do have meetings and hear from three of them? Even if we plan on putting our money in the money market account, still go through the process of selecting one and having some interviews.
That would still be my thought.
Yeah.
I think we have to find a differentiation. But
yes.
The thing that would change is we're no longer quite under the deadline. We have some time.
Yeah, so we have time.
So we could do these, a month out, 2 months out. Stephanie's going to be out of town for a while. Then we wait for her return to be part of that. That's part of the decision. If we're trying to make a choice for November 1st, we barely have time to even have this presentation. So if we're under agreement that the money market fund's the best place for our participants, then we have a luxury of waiting into the fall, into the winter if we needed to, before we added it. We talked about, the crossover may not be till 2026, so maybe we have more time than that. But I think we want to get the issue settled, say, in the next 3 months or so.
Scott, can you kind of give us a hypothetical participant? I'm curious how we'd actually use the stable value fund going forward, given that the money market is guaranteed now, has very similar stability in terms of capital preservation.
Yeah.
And the current rate environment. Can you kind of let us know, just moving forward, how you would generally advise participants to use that instead of the Vanguard fund?
Right. So I wouldn't see anybody moving to that voluntarily, other than the fact that they might want just diversification. I don't think that diversification is necessary, but some people might choose to take it. But I don't think you would see people finding the stable value fund attractive until the yields on the money market fund went below the stable value fund. And then they would want to move their money over the stable value fund. So that would be an environment where there's perhaps an economic slowdown, a recession, or a depression, where the Fed is taking Fed funds rate, say, below 3% or even 2%, where now, as we had, we didn't have the problem that other retirement plans had during, say, 2009 to 2021, where your money market fund was guaranteed, but it didn't pay you anything. So if yields went down to, say, where they were in 2016 or where they were in 2021, then the stable value fund paying 2 or 3% would be attractive versus a money market fund paying 1% or 0% as it was. Now, the Fed has said they don't want to go back to that zero interest rate policy. As a member of the financial markets, I wouldn't want them to do that either, but that's the possibility that may come again. And if there's a financial crisis at some point, then I would expect that that would happen again. Okay. So, the question has come up in this process is, do we even need a stable value? Another one of my clients has never had a stable value fund. We made this presentation to them. And they decide money market's what we're going to have. Rates at zero. Well, the district could go that route too.
But it seems like you see maybe not the short term, but longer term, there's a role for this kind of fund in the plan.
I think there's a role, and it's certainly typical in the tax-exempt market to see that. But it does give you, just in different environments and different cycles, one will look better than the other. The rates move more slowly on stable value funds. So if we're in a declining rate environment for an extended period of time, eventually it's going to be more attractive.
there going to be a minimum dollar amount in that stable value fund that whoever issues this fund or whoever we select will require?
Am I? Yeah, I mean, I was telling them 30 million, so we were getting.
It's going to cost them. I'm assuming there's some fixed cost for them to manage the fund.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're going to make money on the money that's in there, but in essence, on some of these products, they would have a minimum. So if we go back to these providers and say, you're a finalist, we have to tell them that there's not going to be money wired there. They may change their interest or say, we have a different bid, if that's the situation. That is a wild card.
Because the RFI made the assumption that $32 million would be in there?
That was my assumption at the time, yeah.
So your five may go down to three or four. Can you give them that info?
Well, they're not offering five. They're offering like 289, but maybe the expenses might be a little bit more.
Your five companies.
That's true.
Your five remain.
Absolutely true. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, I mean, we may have a final three, and two of them are like, no, we'll pass. So now we have a different final three.
Well, it seems a little premature to select somebody that we don't know the details.
Yes. So if we go for your question number one, if we pick the money market, that gives us a lot of time. That would give you time to tell the five finalists that there's going to be a lot less money than they were thinking.
We could.
And you may come back in a month saying we're already down to three.
Yeah, that's a good point, John. Very good point. Yeah, so we're not, if we're going money market, our feet are not held to the fire to make any decisions today other than that.
Someone needs to make a...
Any questions, anyone online?
I don't see any hands.
Sounds like a decent plan of the time.
And we can still spend some time going through the due diligence we've done. We just don't have to make a decision today.
So on this last page here, the expense for all of these five. What
would we pay? Yeah, so if you're holding money in that fund, they're charging that expense, and then the current yield is the net after that expense.
Even though it says gross, it's really net after the...
The gross crediting rates was to give a historical example, so the difference in fees didn't make any difference. But in essence, what you're buying into is the current yield, which is in the middle there. That's what people who move money in there were getting. The stuff about 2020 through 2023, I'll explain, but it was kind of showing how they dealt with different environments and what yields they were paying. So gross is before the fees. They have other products with different fees, of course, but the current yield on the product they proposed for us, to John's point, those yields could change because the expense could change when they're, now that's $1 million bid instead of a 30. Now, I looked at all of them. One of them had a $10 million minimum, but it wasn't one of the five finalists. So as you can see, if you're looking at 275, 289, 289, 408, and 294, with one exception, we're talking about the interest rates going down 2.5%, which if you divide that into, rate cut is 0.25%, that's 10 or so rate cuts. Some people thought in September that rate cut's going to be 50 basis points, so that's a double rate cut. I don't think based on the data we saw the last 2 weeks, that'll be possible. That'll be likely, but it's always possible.
Scott, or maybe Natasha, can you confirm that if the committee took an action on a fund for the transfer from the Empower GIF today, and then the board considered that on September 4th, next board meeting, would that meet Fidelity's timing?
Oh, yeah. Sure. They don't have to add the fund. That timing could be further into the future if needed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In essence, with Fidelity, that's their default right now. So we'd be overruling the default if we decided to do something else.
So do we need an action to give is your sort of option B under number one here?
I would still make an action so that it's not, it wasn't done at Stephanie and my level, it was done at the board level. So,
I'll go ahead and make a motion for the committee to entertain that we direct, I guess, Fidelity to take the first Empower GIF wire, 50% of the balances on November 1st, and place that in the Vanguard Better Money Market Fund.
and then let Scott kind of weed out if there's any changes to that.
Yeah, I think, and then continue researching our stable wild value options under the new circumstances.
Good. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Any other questions for anyone online?
Right. No, great presentation.
Thank you.
I'll call the roll then.
Okay, roll call. Director Mezqua?
Yes.
Director Wigand?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Jason Dadakis?
Yes.
Roy Herndon?
Yes.
That motion carries 5-0.
So if I may, just one more thought. Employee Advisory Committee kind of gave me these instructions last March, and you guys can change those instructions. But as far as the five priorities, number one was the 12-month put. I assume we're all in agreement that would stay there. Number two would be the credit rating. So the credit rating, higher credits are safer with your money, but they pay more interest because they have to attract investors to it, but you're taking more risk. In my world, I want my safe money to be safe. So I would recommend that stay as number two. Number three was the expense ratio. Number four was the quality of the insurance companies. And number five, to surprise some people, would be the actual yield. So my priority personally, and this is my recommendation, but you guys can take a different approach, is I want to make sure that there's return of the principal rather than as much a return on the principal, because we don't want to have issues where there's a loss in these accounts. Now's your chance to disagree.
So I think it sounds like the advisory groups would sort of emphasize the stable value. I think, I don't think anything's changed.
That's sort of liquidity, safe, and cheap.
Makes sense.
Okay. And then if I may just talk about one of these, just to see what your reactions to. Again, we're not making a decision today. But in terms of these five finalists, one of these is not like the others. Anybody see which one that is?
New York. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not just the yield, but note that New York Life does not use wrap providers. So New York Life does have its own credit rating, which is down towards the bottom strength of the parent company, which is pretty darn good. But you're not distributing out the risk. Now, so some people who are shopping for yield first, they don't care. That sounds great. Let's go for that. But notice a couple things. The portfolio duration is the shortest. So if rates are starting to fall, they're actually going to be impacted in a negative way first, because they are buying bonds that will come due sooner, and the rates that we're getting today will go away sooner. But you are looking at a portfolio credit rating that's different from the others, where their single A credit was still investment grade, but different from the others, which are all double A. Some are double A minus, some are double A plus. And then the thing I showed on there is the percentage of the different types of bonds. AAA bonds are the safest, then double A, then single A, then triple B. If you're curious, Orange County Water District gets triple A credit. So for comparison, so is Berkshire Hathaway. So you guys are in good company. But if you notice, there's a very big difference in some of these portfolios in terms of how they manage it. So New York Life is able to pay more because they're taking more risk. Now they're offering their guarantee to that risk. But the question I'm putting before the committee, and just as some guidance to me, is how do you feel about that risk? If we're prioritizing yield fifth, then it shouldn't be appealing, but what are your thoughts when you actually see the numbers?
Yeah, I was trying to balance that in my mind that, okay, they obviously are weighted on the, you know, heavily on the triple B and the lower rated bonds, yet they're guaranteeing it. So it's kind of a weird thing. It's their higher risk, but they're still backed by at least that one company. So, it seems like they're lower quality bonds was probably one of the reasons why they have a better performance, but their shorter term is another reason.
Good point.
Having
better. Absolutely better. Right. And that's why their market to book value is the highest of the batch, because they didn't have long a duration. Great point.
I was thinking from an interview standpoint, if we were going to go to that next step, that they would be at least one of my three, that it would still be interesting to interview them.
I had the same thought. Yeah. It's sort of like a lot of these are very similar to each other, but they stood out. So I think that an interview would be important to figure out how they're different and whether that's worth it to us.
And the yields over the last 4 years are consistently higher.
Consistently higher.
And Invesco and Columbia Ameriprise both have their percentage in AAA bonds pretty high.
Very high.
And yeah, it's more balanced on the other three.
Right. Exactly. So in a recession, you'd be very happy to have Invesco and Columbia. In a recession, you'd be worried to have New York Life.
Right. Scott, do these share class names mean anything?
They just mean specifically two things. One is what the expense ratio is, and then two is what the minimums are.
But are they unique across the board, or are they just unique to the company?
Unique to the company.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, everyone's got their own name.
Okay.
It's sort of silly, actually, but just so you know what they've been. But to the question that came up earlier, is if we go back and say there's not a big wire coming your way, they may say, oh, okay, you're not Class A1 anymore. You're B minus or whatever their nomenclature is. So.
What about Ameriprise only having $1.73 billion in
that assets? Works. Thank you for noticing that. Yes.
And what's the sub-advisors to have 35%?
So they're actually not managing all the bond portfolio internally. They'll hire fixed income managers and farm out some of the management with hopes of diversifying the risk that way too.
Is that a good strategy, or is that kind of questionable?
I think it's kind of neutral. I mean, I've looked at it from both sides and thought, well, it's kind of nice they're spreading that out. And then when you look at the difference on the yields or the credits, it doesn't seem to make a huge difference. So, now, when I read, you know, all the fine print and the due diligence, T. Rowe Price and Invesco felt to me like the best presentations in terms of they're really putting everything into this and they really documented it well. But when you look at the numbers here, they're not as appealing. So that's the hard part. That's why I couldn't just say, you got to pick this one.
If you rose the more expensive ones.
Yeah, and they're more expensive.
But they all, since 2020, have received something where it's not or scary. It's,
yeah, right.
It's protected, at least in a 4 year. Have you ever seen, looking years back beyond that, that where they were negative? Or
no. Most of them guarantee that they'll never be negative, so.
I was curious about the portfolio duration. For a given company, how much does that change over time? Do they float much within a certain range, like between 2 to 4 years, or is it even tighter than that typically?
Yeah, good over question. So most of them actually gave me an answer to one of my questions, what their duration range was. So okay. Some of them would say, well, 1.5 to 4 years, or 3 to 5 years, or something like that. So yes, they will change. It's interesting because, and I didn't put this on the thing, but I asked questions of what their duration was in 2020, 2021, 2022, and 2023, because I wanted to see how well they anticipated the interest rates going up. And some have changed, like T. Rowe Price, their maximum, I think, is a duration of 3.25 in the 3.44. So that made me think they've been loading up on longer term bonds now while rates are higher. Mm-hmm. So maybe they'll look more appealing when rates are lower.
Right. Okay?
Only the future will tell. But that does vary. But, you know, the concern I have with New York Life short duration is that we've already got the short duration option. If you didn't have that option, you're only picking one, maybe that short duration to appeal to you because you're sort of straddling a traditional stable value with a traditional money market.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Scott's a good point. We want this to be complementary to the money market we already have.
Yeah.
Not overlap too much.
Yeah. Because then you're just two of the same thing.
Yeah.
So everyone understand what the market value to book value part means? We kind of talked about it today, but does it make sense? So that's how much they're underwater on their bond portfolios. It's like Empower is underwater on their bond portfolio. Now they hold the duration, it's all back to book value. But again, people want their money back.
And when you say 93%, they're 7% underwater.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So if you liquidate the whole fund, there's a multi-million-dollar loss that somebody has to take. Or if you just wait to maturity, then nobody loses anything. But what do people want to do? They want it out of the low-yielding thing into the high-yielding thing, so they have to liquidate at an adverse market conditions, which is why they have market value adjustments. That's why they have restrictions on the gates. That's why they have restrictions on how quickly you can move the money out. Because they're trying to protect themselves.
New York Life is actually the best of the group.
Yeah. Because they have the shortest duration. Yeah.
And our money market is a max of 13 months.
The single security they can own, the max is 13 months, but their duration has to be 60 days or less.
Yeah.
So it's infinitely short. By the time they bought it, it's mature. So. Okay, well, that's all I needed to cover. Happy to go through all these numbers here, but I think we have our marching orders for the moment. Does anybody disagree?
Okay. One thing I'd add, Scott, is I think, you know, back with the Prudential GIF, I think we thought we were getting a 12-month put there.
Absolutely.
So if there's like fine print for these, that there's a right. Date for these, we should try to Definitely. Unearth that as much as we can. Okay.
Yeah, I've gotten them to say in writing that it would be a 12-month put, but I certainly think we want our attorney to vet any contracts. And that's the thing, is this is a contract we're signing.
Yeah.
So when we just pick the Vanguard fund, that's a different story. You get rid of them anytime. This is an actual contract that we're entering into. So I think, you know, legal would have to vet that before we signed it. Also something that would slow down the process. Thank you, everybody, for your input.
Any other online questions?
No.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, I will direct this to be agendized on the consent calendar at the September 4th board meeting. And are there any announcements or reports?
In person.
Okay. Great. Voyager.
Thank you.